Thank you. Well, I've just come back from Paris, where I spoke to a real Mongolian specialist who said to me, "Mongols and elephants, you must be mad." This is from a kind of rather speculative perspective of arguing that elephants may have been one of the reasons, anyway, why the Mongols failed to keep on keeping on, in Bob Dylan's words, despite repeated attempts to conquer South and Southeast Asia. My point being that this is the one area where there were lots of war elephants, and that the Mongols found this quite tricky. So you can see from this ancient map that South and Southeast Asia were not incorporated into the empire. This bit of central and upper Burma was very temporary and didn't last. I'll come back to that in a second. There's a whole debate about the importance of firearms in using horses or elephants as military animals. As firearms became improved, there's little doubt that elephants became downgraded as military animals because they were less able to stand up to the noise and all the rest of it. However, I think for this period, for the Mongol Empire period, this is not yet important, as firearms are not yet widespread enough or effective enough. So here we have an example of where elephants and horses are commingling. The Mongols first came across war elephants in Middle Eastern lands, but it's quite important to stress that this was an area where there were virtually no elephants left in the wild, and there were actually very few war elephants. Moreover, as I argued at the Bangalore conference, Arab Muslim ideology was fairly opposed to elephants. They were seen as dangerous animals. They were seen as potentially as destroyers of the Islamic faith for very complicated reasons, which hopefully will come out in our book quite soon. So in other words, the Mongols were facing small elephantries with beasts imported at great cost. This is an illustration of elephants circling the Kaaba in Mecca, which was the story about elephants being used to attack the Muslims in their heartland and destroy the faith. Lies, it's kind of myth, which because they almost certainly didn't get to Mecca, but it's kind of myth which lies at the one of the origins, anyway, of Arab Islamic rather than Persian Islamic, but Arab Islamic hostility to elephants. So when Genghis Khan got to Samarkand, what we get is the first clash, but the elephants are stampeded with arrows. By that stage, though, apparently only 20 elephants left in Samarkand, so not a large force. In earlier years, under the Ghaznavids, you get a much larger corps of elephants. This is there being used. This is an imaginative reconstruction. As battering rams. So Genghis Khan then, faced with what to do with the elephants, decided they were useless. Too slow, they eat too much. Elephants are tremendously greedy animals, as we saw in that clip of the mangoes. They eat vast amounts compared to their weight. And so he simply turned the elephants loose into the steppe to die of thirst and hunger. And in fact, this is the story of Genghis Khan turning the elephants loose. Sometimes used as a kind of illustration of his ruthlessness. Of course, he did a lot of much worse things with human beings. This is Samarkand. You can see that once the scene from the air, once the elephants got out of the oasis area, you know, they were going to be in the desert, and there's no way they were going to survive. However, as the Western Mongols went over to Islam gradually, very gradually, a very Persian and not Arab note, a very Persian fascination with elephants reasserted itself, and we begin to get the return of the elephant to these Western Mongol realms. This is one of Al-Khazrini's texts with the elephant illustration, so we get this kind of return to an interest in elephants. In South and Southeast Asia, elephants were not domesticated, contrary to what is often said. They were essentially tamed animals. They were taken anew at each generation from the wild, the reasons being that it's extremely expensive to raise an animal in a domestic state, and it's just cheaper in a way to go and get them in the wild, and they were used much more prominently in military activities. So here we have the old and the more or less present distribution of the Asian elephant, and you can see there's a kind of, not an exact correlation, but something of a correlation between the areas where the Mongols conquered and where they didn't. The big exception is China. I'll come back to China in a second. So if we start with South Asia, it's often said that the Mongols didn't try to conquer South Asia. I think that's incorrect. I think what we have actually is a number of at least substantial raids, if not perhaps full-blown and really sort of sequential attacks. But nevertheless, particularly in the 1290s and 1300s, these are all beaten back by the Sultanate of Delhi. And note, it says that he fielded 2,700 war elephants in 1298. So we're a long way away from the 20 measly elephants of Samarkand, right? This is a much, much larger force. Delhi Sultanate then under the Huji dynasty, and this is the Sultan Alauddin himself. And this is the capture of elephants. This is an early 19th century illustration, but this is basically how you do it. You kind of push the elephants into a corral, and then you use already tamed elephants to train them. The one big exception then, in terms of Mongol success, is kind of problematic, in as much as was Timur or Tamerlane actually a Mongol. I mean, he claimed Mongol origins, but he's often seen as a Turk. And nevertheless, he saw himself as the inheritor of the Western Mongol tradition, and he did defeat the elephants of the Delhi Sultanate. But note, much later, this is a century later, and there are far fewer elephants. He captured only 120 in this attack on Delhi. A number of rather violent methods to deal with elephants, which had all been carefully sort of prepared beforehand. So this is the Delhi elephants retreating in front of Timur's cavalry. These are the caltrops, one of the things that was used to try and stampede the elephants to get into their feet. Note that this is, like many of these things, a double-edged sword, because it will also affect your horses if you're not careful. So this is an old technique. The Romans used caltrops. It's an ancient and rather nasty way of getting at animals. And this is the Timurid Empire. You can see it's limited to the Western Mongol areas. Timur then went on to use his captured elephants to some degree in his West Asian campaigns. Not all of them survived, but some were used. It's very hard to get a sense of how many or exactly how, but in any event, not on a major scale. So we're talking about, you know, in the tens. So not all the elephants survived, not all the elephants that did survive were taken into Western Asia. This is elephant armour at the Battle of Ankara, 1402. And here we have the elephants used in a different way. Got the elephant down here being used to build the great mosque in Samarkand. So they weren't just used for military purposes, also used for civilian instruction. In Southeast Asia, we have the Mongols' first, allegedly anyway, the first major defeat in 1258 after they'd taken Yunnan, which in those days was not part of China. They tried to send their forces through the northern part of Vietnam to attack China from behind. And the Mongols clearly were frightened of Vietnamese elephants. They saw them as fearsome and dangerous beasts, but they did manage to stampede them again, this time by shooting flaming arrows at their feet. However, the Mongols' horses became sick and hungry. They couldn't eat the local vegetation. And the Vietnamese pushed the Mongols back into Yunnan. So it's a bit of a stalemate. It's not entirely clear who won. But you could argue that this was the first time that the Mongols were really halted and that the sort of myth of their invincibility was shattered. This is what Vietnamese historians like to argue anyway. Let's put it that way. So this is the Mongol push. Note it shows Vietnam as a tributary state, and Korea in this particular map. But essentially they were trying to go from this area through here into southern China. These are Vietnamese forces. This is a later invented, but it's showing the cavalry, infantry and elephantry all together. More important, I think, in a way, more sustained were the Mongol defeats in both Vietnam and Champa. Champa is today part of central Vietnam. When the Mongols had subdued China and made a much more sustained effort to conquer the Indochinese peninsula. Again, we have the horses are sick, Hungary unable to maneuver, and after a much longer campaign, the Mongols are pretty thoroughly defeated by 1288. However, Vietnam and Champa both agree to pay tribute, but you could say, again, they've always paid tribute to China, so what's new? The Mongols are now the masters of China, they're just paying the old tribute, and ironically, of course, part of this tribute is in elephants and ivory. These are the campaigns. Note the quite wide-ranging campaigns, much more wide-ranging than the first attack from Yunnan. In Burma, we get the same sort of stalemate-type situation. Here, it's interesting, it's the Burmese who attack, not the Mongols. So the Burmese are furious that the Mongols have taken over Yunnan, which they see as part of their sphere of influence. And we have, again, this kind of unclear result where the Mongol horses are initially terrified, they break, but they regroup, and the Mongols capture 200 of the Burmese elephants. This is a Burmese war elephant with its various accoutrements. Then the Mongols go on to the attack, they move into central Burma, and they do take over the central areas. That's meant to be 1283 to 1287, not to 1887. and we get the same scenario, horses, Mongol horses in difficulty, and the Mongols basically withdrawing. After a fairly long period, they had set up a Chinese province in northern Burma. But again, tribute is paid, including elephants and ivory. So this is the red lines of the Mongol advance. Note that Pagan actually was not taken at that stage. Against the Thai and the Khmer in Southeast Asia, there are simply threats, and the Thai and Khmer simply ignore these threats, but agree, again, to pay tribute, including elephants and ivory. This is a Cambodian Khmer war elephant from one of the Angkor Wat reliefs. Finally, in China, then, where elephants had almost vanished in the wild by the time of the Mongol dynasty, the Chinese did keep some tamed elephants, and they were very keen on ivory, but they hardly used elephants as beasts of war. This is Mark Elvin's book, where he shows the gradual retreat of the elephants in China down to the far southwest, essentially due to environmental destruction. So the Mongols in China are faced with what to do with these elephants, including the ones that they get as tribute from Southeast Asia, and they do use them to some extent. They use them in provincial armies, not entirely clear where the decision-making is done, but in the southwest, where you do still get some elephants, they are used in small campaigns. And Kublai Khan famously, allegedly, had four elephants for his command center. This is Marco Polo. Marco Polo, of course, is a notoriously difficult source to use. Unclear whether the four elephants had a sort of common howdah which was placed on top of them, or whether, much more likely, they were pulling some kind of chariot. But the common howdah was something that artists loved, and so practically speaking, this is an almost impossible situation. Can you imagine what would happen if the four elephants stampeded and went off in different directions? This is very unlikely that this ever happened. Some civilian use then, Kublai Khan allegedly, Marco Polo again, had 5,000 elephants. I think one has to be extremely dubious about these figures. But they're used for certain kind of prestige and a certain amount of civilian use as well. This is actually a Ming elephant carriage from the next dynasty, from the Chinese dynasty, which succeeded the Mongols. But this is more likely to have been the command center or the type of thing that Kublai Khan used as his command center. Finally, then, sort of coming further forward in time, what we get is the kind of ideological conquest of eastern Mongol lands by elephants. And this essentially because the eastern Mongols, unlike the western Mongols who converted to Islam, the eastern ones converted to Tibetan Buddhism and inherited the ideological notion of elephants as symbols of the Buddha himself in an earlier incarnation, but more generally as signs of the strength and stability of the faith. So you get a lot of Buddha imagery, which is, takes the form of elephants. And the Mongols then adopt this, even though there are no elephants in the Mongol heartlands. This is a particularly interesting figure. This is a carved elephant in the 20th century, and these were used as kind of symbols of resistance to the Chinese and Russian conquerors of the Mongols. They're used as a kind of a prayer memento, but they were carved in clandestine conditions and used to express a resistance to Chinese and Russian domination. This is, you may not think this looks like an elephant, but local Mongols consider this to be an elephant rock, and it is a sacred site for them. So the elephant imagery in Buddhism was not just one of representing the Buddha himself, but it was also one of kind of resistance and sanctifying local places. When the Mongols are briefly independent, and they break free from both China and Russia in the early 20th century, they actually buy an elephant from a Russian circus and keep it at court as a symbol here more of secular power, although secular and religious power obviously intermingled. So here he is with his monastic keepers. There's a whole complicated story about this elephant, not all of which I believe. So in essence, what I'm trying to argue is that the Mongols couldn't hold lands where there were numerous war elephants, even though they won battles. They couldn't, over the long term, hold the lands. Now, whether that's due to the war elephants which were being used by the peoples there, or whether it's due to the fact that these lands were unsuited to their horses, is unclear, but you could argue that actually these are two sides of the same coin, that as Mongol horses fell sick and died in large numbers, this actually tipped the balance in favour of people who were using elephants, which were better suited to local conditions. One should also say, though, complicating this story, that local horses were also better suited to these conditions, and so this may be a horse story rather than elephant story, in fact. Finally, then, though, elephants kind of have a kind of symbolic conquest of the Mongols themselves, both in the West, where they convert to Islam, and in the East, where they convert to Buddhism.